1, 2, 3.
We're already recording on the same. Why would I don't know why you did that.
That Quinn? Was for motivation. That Quinn, was a cheer.
We've been, listen, we've been at
Can
this.
Can I get a T? T, you've got your T, you got your T. Can I get a D? Yeah, you got your D, you got your D. Can I get a C? C, you got your C, you got your C. Truly, darkly, creepily.
Bum, bum. Quinn, we have been at the recording game. So here's the thing. Quinn and I, we're not professionals. I don't know if you've gathered this from us at this juncture.
We're going to let you in on a little secret.
Here's the deal. I'm going to call them out. Adobe Audition really screwed the pooch on us. Yeah. They got rid of our collaboration station.
Kicked us straight out the door. We basically got fired.
We got fired
from
again.
From a platform we pay for.
It was so rude. And so fired. I was like, we keep getting fired. Maybe the problem is not them. Maybe it's us. So we've been
having... we're actually getting better at getting fired.
I think our attitudes are better. We've been sort of like, we're dodging bullets. We're getting in there. So this is going to come out like in fucking March. We're so... Ahead of the game. It's amazing.
You guys are only meeting our past selves. I hope you still feel good about this relationship.
I hope I'm okay.
I think you're going to be better.
That's great. That's really exciting to
hear. To me, you've been on a one-way track as I've watched you over the years, straight to heaven. Did you like going to the gym?
Karen, I don't want to talk about it. So here's the deal. I guess I'm not chill. I'm not a chill girl. I think I need to understand. Like, I always want to be.
I would never describe you as, you know, my chill friend, Carrie.
You're like, I use my.
To be fair, unhinged. No one would describe me as that either.
Totally. So Quinn was like, Carrie, let's join this gym or get a day pass. Well, I got a 5-day pass, so I'll do you 5 better. And I went and I did not one class. Not 2 classes. Quinn and I did 3 classes, and I haven't lifted a fucking weight in years. And it's led by this guy in a velour tracksuit named Steve, who's playing like Caribbean reggaeton, and it's amazing.
And how old do you think Steve is?
70s.
He's great.
Easily. But he was like, I haven't lifted a weight in a while, okay? Unless you count children and my bags.
Sure.
Those are the only weights I've lifted. And I was, you know... grabbing onto the low weights because I'm going, you know what?
Warming
first
up.
First day back.
Yeah.
Got to warm up. Well.
Got to be safe.
Wasn't. Well, Steve said, throwing caution to the fucking wind. Steve was like, higher. He would like, and then he came over and kept giving me like push up. And here's the thing that annoys me though about like a man giving a woman a push up. I'm like, do you know how much tit weight I have on my body? Like, do you know how
like I'm
much?
Up with a-
like, I have like 20, I have like a 15 pound weight strapped to my boobs, strapped to my chest.
I got a barbell on my back.
So it's like him being like, you can do it. I'm like, Steve, it's easy for you to say I can do it. You don't know what it's like carrying these around.
Yeah. I think maybe say that to him.
Could you imagine? No, because
I am so sweet.
I'm a lady to authority. He's the one, the pro. I can't make.
But I gotta tell you, this gym has those vibes of like, you can very much, someone can be like, do this. And you can say to them, you gotta be kidding me.
I said, like, I can't. And he goes, yes, you can. And I was like, that's not gonna work for me.
He thinks he's being, you know, a Gatorade commercial. He doesn't know, you know, like they're all just trying to be.
What I'm saying is the yesterday, this was 2 days ago, yesterday, couldn't fucking walk. I'm staying at Quinn's house, and I can't make the bed because I'm so sore. Like, I can't. I'm, like, crawling
Carrie
out of bed.
Got stuck half on, half off the bed the other day.
The other day, I knelt to walk, and I moved it too far, and my center of gravity was just in the wrong place, and I got stuck, so I had to retreat the front knee. Mm-hmm. I would die so fast in war.
She would be wearing her helmet though, so she's
trying.
I would
be wearing my helmet,
best.
But like, you know what? I'd be a really great for morale. I'd be really good at morale.
People would go, "Well, I'm not her."
That's rude. Because I'm not her.
Could be worse. Could be her.
Did you feel that? Did I motivate you in the class in that way? Quinn was like,
no,
you,
I just cheat. You see me. I just look at
I don't see you.
I got my eagle eye on Steve, and I know when I'm in the hot seat or not. So I'm doing jack shit till Steve looks over, and then I'm doing double time.
It was so bad, and I didn't bring a water bottle, so I was like absolutely parched.
absolutely parched.
Famished. And I was like, this is – and then there's a mirror right in front of you, which I'm like, I don't need to watch myself.
Yeah. I do want to start buying cute gym outfits, which I think will help with the workout. I
there
just want
to,
like, dress
–
you always say that. Dress for the part you want, and I want the part of, like, person who's, like, successful at the gym. So I'm going to start buying the clothes that tell me that I am.
Yeah. I think the top that I was wearing was really not flattering, and that didn't help. And I was like, maybe Steve is like, here, girl – go up. Maybe Steve was like, girl, go up and wait. So you need all the help you can get. Like, I wonder if he was like, girl,
I'm here to help you.
He's like, I trust me, you need to go up.
So can I tell you, I feel like I want to give the dear readers an update on getting murdered in the woman's home.
I don't want to hear it unless you fucking recorded it. And you know what? You didn't. You didn't do the one thing I
Carrie's
asked you.
Livid, but here's the thing. As you guys know, one of my recent gigs I got hired to do was go to somebody's house and pretend to die after getting to know all their friends. So how it happened is I went to, like, Park Avenue to a really fancy doorman apartment. Yeah, I changed out of my ugly shoes into my, like, I'm a lady shoes to go upstairs because I knew it was going to be that kind of atmosphere. And
did
it surely
feel like
was
you were in like a worker bee? You know, you had like your white tennis shoes and your heels and your purse. Yeah.
Yes. But I'm like pouring sweat. It was like a lot.
I know that feeling. So
you know, where you're like sweating. You're like, I just have to change my shoes. But I also don't want any guests of the party to see me in the lobby changing my shoes. So
I know that feeling.
Hurry, hurry. And then I got upstairs and I met the woman who was throwing the party. And she has an insanely beautiful home, a fireplace in the living room. The dining room's covered in drapery. There's like a room they call the red room, which I was a little nervous to go inside of.
Yeah, we've all read 50 Shades of Grey.
Sure. It was not what I expected. It was more a pink or a mauve, and it had gorgeous wallpaper everywhere. Every room was wallpapered in this
That's classy.
Only the rich, fabulous way that made me like, oh my God. And a butler handed me not just a glass of champagne, but like a beautiful crystal red, like goblety look. Like it was so pretty, the glass. And then he poured champagne in it. And then anytime I had like a few sips, he'd just be there again refilling it.
Oh, no.
Which was, I was like, uh-oh. And then he started passing. He brought caviar to me and the host while we were talking before the party began. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a disaster. So I'm like housing caviar, but trying to do it in a way where no one notices that I'm housing the caviar. And then the guests start to come and they're all... What do you picture when you picture like an upper, wherever I was, parents of like 1 and 2 and 3 year olds? And they're like,
design. I mean, they have help.
They look like they have help. Their hair looks good. Well, their skin looks good. Their arms,
hairless,
look good. They go to Steve. Like, they don't go to Steve.
They don't go to
Steve. Comes to them.
Steve, no. They have someone who is like cooking for them. They have like a whole thing. Well, they're airbrushed. They walk in airbrushed. Here's my question though. It was a shoes on house, I assume.
Yes.
To me, that's how I think that's how I know you're rich. If you're a shoes on house,
because
here's the deal.
You don't have to clean any of the mess.
Not even that.
What?
Because you're taking cabs everywhere and you don't walk very far. Like if you're a house of like means.
Oh my God, that's so interesting.
Like my shoes.
You're stepping in and out of a taxi to a door.
Yes. My shoes, I am wearing them on the street. I'm wearing them in the subway. I don't want anyone's shoes in my home because I'm like, I know what's on these streets because I live out on them.
Right.
And I think rich.
We're streetwalkers.
I'm a lady of the streets. And so I think when you go to a shoes on, like, I think there's a couple, like, I'm a shoes off house girl. Shoes on rich people is like, oh, you don't know what's out there.
Right.
Like, you have, your nose is so high in the air, you can't look down.
1,000%. So
that's my theory.
It was like her friends got there, and I think what I was the most struck by was the way they all deal with each other, which is it felt like going to a party where no one really knows each other.
No.
But there was only 7 people. So it was this feeling of like, it felt professional. It felt like people were asking like questions about where they had traveled to or how this trip or that trip was. Like everyone went somewhere really lovely for Christmas and I totally could like ride the Ike Fit In vibe and be like, I was in Kona, Hawaii. It's lovely there this time of year and all times of year, in fact. So I was like, but I had to present as I'm one of you. So I'm wearing one of my rental costumes and I'm like, like I did my hair and I'm trying to like fit in. And then like I actually did end up meeting a couple that I was like, oh, I feel like I would be friends with you. Like they were the only couple that they lived in Brooklyn and everyone else was like, I've never left Manhattan was the feeling. They were like, Brooklyn, wow. Wow. You know, like when people are like, God, whoa, God, where is that again? Like, anyway, she's a philanthropist, which you're like, I have to look up what that is on my phone.
Philanderer.
She's a philanderer. Anyway, it was fancy, fancy. And then we all go to this room to have dinner. And the dinner has a card on your in front of your seat. First of all, it's like assigned seating. Like there are name.
Yes.
So like I can never imagine. Should I do that tonight for my dinner? That would be so funny.
We should have COA. So it's like it looks like totally. COA's made the – oh, you sit here. Yeah. I actually love that.
I'm going to do that tonight. I'm going to start doing that so I feel wealthy. And I'm going to do what she did where there's place things in front Chargers. Of you that say what the meal is going to be. So anyway, we sit down and the
that
room
just seems like a lot
like
of work.
I said, the room is
she's not doing that work. You're doing that work. Don't do that to yourself.
It's too funny. I have to now. The room is covered in drapes, like I said, and the top of the room is like drapes that come down like a tent, like you're inside a circus tent, but fancy, and there's a chandelier. And she was like, oh, well, this room is just featured on and I'm not loving the comments. And I was like, really? She's like, a lot of people took issue with my name not being part of it, but me being called the wife. And I'm like, well, you are the wife. Like, I don't. The philanderer.
The philanderer's wife. The philanderer's. The philandering wife. I think the philanderer.
The philandering philanthropist. Yes. Mm-hmm. So my favorite, though, was she was like, a lot of people said that the ceiling looks like a butthole, and now I can't unsee that.
I did look at it and it looks very fun and cozy, but
I loved it.
The curtains are
personally, I thought it was fucking fabulous.
It's gorgeous. It's like a mauve color. It's like, and in the photo, it comes across as a little pink and it is
people
gathered
were saying, like,
in a
okay,
way.
Grandma.
Well,
like,
it
they
like,
were, there was a lot of mean comments.
Everybody has an opinion on home decoration, like everyone. And the thing is it's a light enough pink and it sort of felt like velour that it catches the light and looks light. So it does, like, it could, I could understand why people are like, that looks like an asshole. It doesn't look like one to me and you saw it in person. But like, people are, it's the internet is going to internet.
Internet's going to internet. And I have to say, I thought the house was beautiful. And then when I went to go sit in that beautiful room, I knew my time was running short. And I was about to, even though I had spoken to all these people in a really normal way and acted like a normal person, I was me. Like, I acted like me. Yeah. And I also told them, like, I'm
the
in theater. Yeah, I just said nothing was a lie. And then it's this awkward thing where, like, she's like, we're going to do a toast and a shot because we do a shot of aquavit because they're like Swedish and it's like a traditional thing. And then I want you to die. So we're at this table. We all do a shot together. And then I stand up and start coughing. They all look over at me and I'm like grabbing the wall, walking around the room, clutching things.
Wall.
Yes. And
I would
then
love
I
it if you pulled down the
drop
fabric.
Dead.
Could you imagine if you.
Oh, my God. Like wreck her room. I'm just so into it. I'm so Daniel Day-Lewis-ing that I just like destroy this woman's home. So I fall into like her hallway where my legs can still be seen and I like convulse.
Mm-hmm. Which smart, you took the top half off. I'm
and
glad
then
you
I
took...
jumped up and I was like,
but I
want to
just
kidding.
Reiterate, oh. No one helped you.
No, but I made it particularly clowny. I don't think anyone thought I was in peril. I think that what everyone thought, and this is also mortifying, was like, you just introduced us to your new friend who's into theater, and now this is how she's acting at the dinner table. She, like, needs – she's a lot. Like, she needs all this. Like, we just met her, but it's like, really?
It's
like,
so
is this a joke?
It's
is this
so –
like,
good.
The social awkwardness of the moment
so
was
good.
Palpable where people thought I was that person that was like, we're sitting down to this dinner, but I'm going to pretend to die when we take this shot for attention. So then when I jumped up and was like, just kidding, I wasn't murdered, but somebody was, and you're all going to have to solve it. By the way, I have to tell you that in this moment, I just keep thinking of what Larry is feeling listening to this. And like, I feel his face getting hot and him being like so embarrassed for me in this way that's like, oh God, he probably can't listen to this. He can listen to the scary stories part, but he can't listen to this. It'd be like way too much for him to bear that this happened. So then I go in the back room.
Do you think that's the thing that makes our parents uncomfortable about what we do in life is that all we're doing is just finding different ways to embarrass ourselves?
They're like, so you're a fucking idiot jester for a living.
Like we just like for a certain people, we're just like, please pay to watch us be an asshole,
I will be
an idiot.
As big an asshole as I will you want
be
me to be.
This podcast is an exercise in my idiocy.
So then I had to come out and host the murder. And actually, everyone had fun. And I got to, during the meal, which usually when I host those, I'm like in much more of the help position where I'm like standing up on a stage or I'm walking around the room. This, I was like sitting down to dinner, having like a paired wine with
gorgeous
Gravlax and, you know, truffle risotto and creme brulee. And it was like, I got to have all those things and wine. And the guy just keeps refilling it to a point where by the time this dinner party was over 2 hours later, I was pretty drunk. And I'm in this woman's home and she's like, stay. This is so fun. And I'm like, I want to.
Thank God they got you.
But I have to
go. Could you imagine
go.
If you were a loser? It was great.
It was great. And then I like waited an hour to get back on the train.
No, you waited an hour for her to sleep and then you killed her and you're a single white female. Yes. And you now live in an
asshole.
And
now I live there.
And now I live in an asshole room.
Asshole in the sky.
It's me.
Anyway, I thought I should clean up the, give people like an ending to the drama.
Okay, so let's keep going. Do we have some people to thank for Patreon-y? Oh, by the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creeply.
I'm Carrie Ipama.
And I'm Quinlan Posner. Uh-oh.
We flipped it.
We flipped it.
I knew it was going to happen.
We already confused people, but they know. They know right now.
We just have one person to thank, and it's Shelly.
Shelly, Shelly, get
on
in
your
my
belly.
I was going to say belly.
Oh, I like it.
But that felt crass.
Shelly, Shelly, down by the seashore. Are you a seashell? Are you a whore? Shelly loves her song so far. Shelly, Shelly, we don't know how we sally this show to you, but somehow we do.
And you're amazing, and thank you for being a Patreon person, a dearest reader. You're amazing, you're amazing. Let's hang out in the Patreon. Should we do a party? And invite all our Patreons. Should we?
Maybe just Shelly before she goes to Helly for liking people like us.
Ba-da-dum. Okay.
All right. That was great.
Quinn and I, again, I can't reiterate this enough.
You go first?
I go first.
Do it.
I got this information from Wikipedia, People, ABC, AP, Independent. There's a couple things that attracted me to this story, but one of which was that the main characters of the story are from Oak Park, Illinois, which is like 30 minutes from my house. And I have friends that live there. And it's this really, really nice suburb right outside of Chicago. And it's this really great suburb. I'm just going to do a little promo for Oak Park. Ernest Hemingway was born there. No brag. There's some Frank Lloyd White. There's Frank Lloyd Wright homes there. Mm-hmm. Brag about it. But it's one of those places in Chicago that's like very close to the city so that it's still on Chicago, the L, like you can get the L train, which is their sort of like train public transportation, but it's still super suburban. Mm-hmm. It's cute. It's sort of, you know what? I feel like it's a little bit like here.
Great.
It's like you're like in a little suburb, but also you're in the city.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to introduce you to a little girl named Heather Mack. And she's a little girl because when I tell this story, I'm telling you who she's born to. She's born to James L. Mack and Sheila Ann Von Weiss. Her dad is a well-known jazz musician and composer. And he's old when he gets with his wife. And he's 66 when Heather is born. And her mom is 43. So she's got some like older parents. Her dad has some kids from other relationships. But one of the things this family did, or the things that I read focused on, was that they went on a lot of trips together. It seemed like they loved to vacation. So Heather is 6 years old. It's 2001. She goes on a cruise with her parents. Sounds fun. Royal Caribbean.
Sure. I
mean, something happened to her dad, and he hurt his foot. The doctors on the ship, I guess, like slapped a Band-Aid on it, but it wasn't good enough, and he's partially paralyzed on his foot. So like not
paralyzed
great,
on his foot? Jesus. What like happened?
I don't know.
Snake bite.
Okay. Snake bite on the Royal Caribbean cruise. This is where we get sued for slander.
That's why we don't get any good sponsors.
From Royal Caribbean.
Because of all the slander.
So he after this happens, her dad sues Royal Caribbean. Okay. Now, this will be important for later. It's sort of like a weird tidbit of a story, but it'll come back around. In 2004, the police are called to their Oak Park residence because apparently James Mack's kids from a previous relationship went to go visit their dad. But I guess his wife, Sheila, was like, no one can visit him. And she apparently turned the lights off and pretended she wasn't home, which is just kind of a weird move. And then they called the police and was like, I want to see my dad, but my stepmom is turning off the lights. I don't know the intricacies of that.
I don't think the police want to hear about that problem.
They don't, but I have some bad news. The police are going to get involved more and more and more.
Okay.
Sadly, though, in 2006, Heather is 11 years old. They're on vacation in Greece. It's like all these things are happening when they're on vacation. On vacation in Greece, and her dad has a pulmonary embolism, and he dies. Oof. It's at this point she's 11. Her dad's just died, and her relationship with her mom doesn't seem to be good, and it's only going to get worse. He's left behind a trust fund of $1.5 million to his daughter, but no, that's not true. He's left behind a $1.5 million trust fund, and I think what's happening is it's in her mom's name, and eventually it will be transferred to her. But I think it's like it goes to his wife and then his daughter, right? Mm-hmm. Money, man. More money, more problems, as they say.
Yeah, more murder.
A family friend is seeing their relationship and she's like, this is not
healthy.
They said they were codependent, that it was really dysfunctional. A family friend was like, this is a disaster waiting to happen. And between 2004, so her dad passed away in 2006, and 2013, the police are frequenting this home. Mm-hmm. Somewhere I read it was like 86 times the police goes to the house, and it ranges from like theft to domestic violence. So in 2004, I mentioned that his kids called the police about not being able to see their dad. But it feels like after her dad died, these calls were escalated, more frequent, and they were just between mother and daughter. Like I said, they were called about thefts and domestic violence disputes. This seems to heighten when Heather goes to high school. She goes to OPRF, Oak Park River Forest, and she's there from 2010 to 2014. Mm-hmm. So here's what we know. Here are some reports that the police who had visited the house have told.
Yeah.
In 2010, Heather punches her mom's broken ankle. Her mom then accuses her of stealing $1,000. Mm-hmm. In February 2011, Heather breaks her mom's arm, and then she removes the phone cord so her mom can't call 911.
Yeek.
July of 2011, she threatens her mom. Her mom calls the police. I mentioned that that James Mack had sued the Royal Caribbean in 2001. Well, by 2011, 5 years after his death, they settled. And $348,000 is awarded to his wife, Sheila. And then $500,000 is supposed to go to his estate. And that, in his will, is going to go to Heather, his daughter. However, a judge had ruled that Heather's mom could get the $500,000. Mm. And according to Wikipedia, the transcript of that court document was not found. These series of violent events are escalating. And then on top of this, the settlement comes in and it feels like the money is becoming a part of it.
Yeah.
And now this money that was supposed to go to Heather is going to her mom, which is not going to help their relationship, frankly. Right. In 2012, Heather bit her mom and leaves a bruise, but the police try to photograph it and her mom was like, no,
God,
don't worry
about
it.
I'm sorry, but she's like a teenager and she's biting?
She's like, it seems like she's out of control. It seems like their relationship is really unhealthy.
Wow.
In 2013, Sheila confided in a detective that she was like, I'm really worried Heather is going to kill me.
I'm really worried about that too, Sheila.
Yeah. In 2014, when Heather is a senior, she starts dating this guy, Tommy Schaefer, a.k.a. Tommy X. And I say X like that because it's EXX. And he is what every mother dreams of, an unemployed rapper. Sheila is not too keen on this pairing. And I think, again, it's not like this guy exacerbated the issue, but Heather seems out of control. at one point her mom sells their house and moves their family, Heather and herself, to the Gold Coast part of Chicago, which is like a really nice part of Chicago. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work. Where there's a will, there's a way. Heather is like, I want to hang out with Tommy X. And according to her, she gets pregnant by Tommy. Heather says that in all, her mom made her have 2 abortions mm-hmm. while she was with Tommy. And so when she finds out she's pregnant again, she goes to the doctor. She's waiting for the blood test results. And her mom books a trip to Bali. Now, okay, I don't know the order of events here, but apparently they leave when Heather is waiting for the blood test results to confirm that she is pregnant.
Okay.
I don't know if this trip was planned mm-hmm. before that. I would assume it was.
Sure.
But despite their relationship,
they're going to Bali.
Yeah, they're going on a Bali trip together.
Despite the fact that you think this person might kill you,
you're
going
to go. Yeah, and you're taking your 18-year-old daughter to Bali. That sounds like I'm blaming a person who will inevitably become a victim. But I think it also really the easiest answer is like it's still her daughter, mm-hmm. you know, and she
maybe
lost
she's
her husband
constantly
to her, you know,
trying to make it right. Maybe she's yeah. constantly trying to fight for that relationship that's going so poorly. And it's like,
maybe if I take
her
away.
Maybe beautiful place yeah. and I take, like, yeah.
Maybe if I remove her from these external mm-hmm. issues, like her boyfriend, maybe I'll have some time to connect. Maybe we'll be okay. It's August 2014 and Sheila and Heather fly first class to arrive at the beautiful St. Regis Hotel in Bali. Mm-hmm. Nice vacation.
Great.
Seemingly gorgeous. Little does Sheila know that Heather had stolen her credit card. And while she wasn't looking, she booked Tommy X, her boyfriend, a flight to Bali. And it's not just like coach. She buys him a business class flight that is worth
$12,000.
$12,000? For business. I know. I was surprised about that. I was like, for business?
And you don't get first for that?
Yeah.
No, that's nuts.
That's wrong. You need to understand your point system, girl.
So that's the crime?
It should be. What airline is charging $12,000 for fucking business class? Not even a lay down bed?
I don't know, but go they're under
yourself.
Arrest.
Go fuck yourself. Okay. And then she books him a single night stay at the hotel.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Heather,
mm-hmm.
you're bad at this.
Well, she is 18, you know?
Yeah, it does seem like an 18-year-old way to solve this. And I totally get what's about to happen. And I'm like, this is dumb.
It's very dumb. So Tommy will later say that he was going to confront Sheila about Heather's pregnancy. It's August 7th, 2014. Cameras on the property show Sheila in a fight with Tommy in the lobby. Embarrassing. We don't have footage of what happened next, but we do know how it ends. It escalates, and Tommy hits Sheila with a metal fruit bowl, and he kills her.
In the hotel room?
In the hotel room.
Not in the lobby.
Not in the lobby.
Yeah.
She is 62 years old.
This is bad.
What happens next is that Tommy and Heather take Sheila's body, Heather's mother's body, and they put her in a suitcase.
Fucking A. This is your mom, girlfriend. This is so wild.
We will later find out that Heather covered her mom's mouth when Tommy killed her.
What?
Hey, it's Carrie. I want to tell you about my upcoming UK tour. I'm bringing my show 6 Chick Flicks, or A Legally Blonde Pretty Woman Dirty Danced on the Beaches while Writing a Notebook on the Titanic, to the UK. We're going to over 50 cities from April 6th until the end of June this year. So please tell your friends, if you don't live there, but you know someone who does, please share it. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at 6 Chick Flicks and visit 6chickflicks.com for more information and for all the tour dates. See you there.
So they have this suitcase, and they do have footage of them carrying the suitcase out and putting it in a cab and then leaving.
Like they
don't leave in
the
cab.
Bag?
No,
they're like take this bye,
and then they just like vanish. The
everything
cab is
about
there.
This is like an 18-year-old shouldn't be allowed to make any decisions.
Yes,
is where I
yes.
end up.
Yes.
I'm like,
yes. So the cab is waiting there, and he notices blood on the outside of the suitcase, and the security guard is like, yeah, I see that too. The two people that dropped it off have not returned, and so the guard tells the driver, go directly to the police. He brings the suitcase directly to the police. They open it, and to their horror, they find Sheila's body in there. It does not take long to find Tommy and Heather. They find them at a cheap motel nearby. They are arrested. Their initial story is that they were robbed and the robbers killed Sheila. By August 15th, they are prisoners. Heather is like, listen, I'm pregnant, but they think she's lying so that she can get extradited back to the U.S. Mm-hmm. A couple days later, they confirm she is in fact pregnant. By September 19th, a little over a month after this happens, Tommy admits to killing Sheila and Heather admits to helping him with her body. They are both charged with premeditated murder, and the punishment for that is death by firing squad.
Holy shit. It is different there.
They're in a different criminal system.
Note to self, do no murders in Bali.
Yeah. Their defense is that Sheila was threatening to abort the baby and they freaked out, and apparently, according to Tommy initially, Sheila choked him for about half a minute, and he, in defending himself, killed her with a metal fruit bowl. Oh. But let's be honest, it was very clear that it had more to do with the trust fund and the money than anything else. Right. There were text messages that they discovered that were saying, like, I can't wait to be rich. It's crazy as fuck. Like, money, nothing rules the world. I don't know what that means. They're 18. They called themselves Bonnie and Clyde. She sent this text to him that just is so chilling. She says, I also know what is in my control. I know what makes people tick. The witch. I know what makes her tick. I'm with her so much. I know her habits, how she acts, what she does at certain times. It's like breaking out of jail. It takes several years of watching. I've been watching her routine and I know what I do. Control. I'm sneaky. I'm smart. And I trust. Trust Bonnie. Don't make everyone else mistake and underestimate me.
Oh. It's like, it's so sad because it's like, it's so 18. Like, it's so indicative of like a not fully formed mind. Yeah. And like somebody that's like high on, I can be powerful.
And the idea that there was, I mean, it's that part of your brain is underdeveloped until you're 25, right? That part of your brain that understands consequence is not developed until you're 25 years old.
Always those stories where there's like a kid that kills their mom or their dad freak me out, because it's like every teenager wants to kill their parents in a way. Yeah. And it's so like
just scary. Your emotions are so, but like I don't want to give her too much sympathy because like this was cold-blooded. Like
And her mom's trying to take her on this trip.
Yeah.
To like heal. Yeah. And then it's like it's eat, pray, die.
It's eat, pray, die.
Didn't go well.
So while the trial is underway, or while they're waiting to make the decision, Heather gives birth to her and Tommy's child. From what I read, the baby is raised in prison for the first 2 years of her life.
I didn't know that was a thing.
I did not either, but it makes sense where it's like the first 2 years it needs their mom.
I guess it's also a Bali thing. Like,
maybe.
We don't let babies grow up in prisons here.
Because our prisons are awful. And yeah. Also like, the way that
a prison playroom, can you imagine? I mean, can you think of anything more depressing in your whole fucking life?
Yeah, just prison. A prison playroom might have a toy or two. I think, but what's really sick about what we do is if there are pregnant prisoners, they give birth and their babies are taken away from them immediately. Right. Like I don't know what's more humane.
Depends why you're there, I guess, but.
Yeah. And so the first 2 years of the baby's life is in a prison, and then she gives the baby to a friend she met in prison while she's there. While she's waiting, she gives birth to her child. That's what you need to know. And then shortly after, in 2015, she is sentenced to 10 years in prison. Tommy pleads guilty, and he is sentenced to 18 years in prison. The judge said that he is lenient because she's given birth, so he gives her less time. Back in the States, it's 2015, and they obviously know about what's going on.
Yeah.
They charge Tommy's cousin, this guy Robert Bibbs, they charge him with federal charges for conspiracy for giving Heather and Tommy advice on how to kill Sheila. He takes a plea deal. He is sentenced to 9 years in prison, which again is going along with this, that this is completely premeditated, that they were seeking the counsel of family members in the States before this trip took place. So his whole thing of like, I was telling about the pregnancy is a lie. She booked a one-night hotel. They knew the plan. In the deal, he admits, he acknowledges that Heather offered Tommy $50,000 to kill her mom, and Tommy went to Bibbs, his cousin, for some advice, and Bibbs encouraged Tommy to kill her. They just wanted access to the trust fund. What's crazy is that this trust fund is still in question. Remember, Heather is the only child of Sheila. So Heather is listed as the beneficiary of a $1.6 million trust fund.
Holy shit.
Which, as it would stand, it would pay her small amounts until she was 30, and then it would give her the rest of the lump sum, which, hot tip, I think that's actually great. You don't know what you're doing until you're 30. Small amounts until 30 feels...
But if you killed to get it, what are we going to do?
So that's the thing. It's like, during the trial, $150,000 was approved to cover her legal and small legal expenses and small payments monthly to pay for food and stuff. Sheila's brother is the admin of the estate. And so he gets a request from her Indonesian lawyer for $200,000. And he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This money is going to be used to cover up bribes. Like, I'm not giving $200,000. Like, what's going on? The trust fund was finally resolved in honor of Heather's daughter. So it won't go to...
So Heather's going to kill her kid now? So it goes back to her?
I mean, I don't think so. But that, it feels like that makes the most sense. But also it's like, who's controlling the trust fund? It's just, it's just wild.
This is wild.
In 2017, Heather makes a video saying that she alone killed her mother. But her lawyers walk that back and say that Tommy coerced her into making it. While she was in Indonesia, she got... It said 34 months remission from her prison sentence, which means like she had like breaks from prison, apparently. I don't know if that's what that means, but it seemed interesting. Or maybe her it was like deducted time. I don't know. But eventually she was freed from prison in October 2021. Now, her plan, what she wants to do is she's freed. Her daughter is there. She's like, I want to stay in Indonesia. I do not want to go back to the U.S. It's safer for me here in Bali. Well, Indonesia immigration is like, nah, we'll pass. Indonesia does not
have a visa for did a murder.
Yeah, did a murder.
Did a murder in Bali.
You get to now be
sounds like a citizen we want. Get out of here.
Well, and Indonesia does not have the same laws as the U.S., which is if you're born there, you're a citizen there. Indonesia, you have to have one parent that is from Indonesia to be considered an Indonesian citizen. Just because her kid was born there does not make her kid Indonesian. Her child is American. And since there is nothing tying her, the Indonesian immigration, the Indonesian government is like, we don't want you. Goodbye.
Beat it.
So she gets to the U.S. and she lands in O'Hare Airport in Chicago, Illinois.
Know it well.
And she is immediately arrested on conspiracy and obstruction charges. Her six-year-old daughter at that point is given to a cousin, which is Sheila's niece. In Colorado, against Heather's wishes. And this is what Heather says. She goes, I've served nearly 10 years in prison. I felt that I had done my time. So she was like, I'm willing to go to trial. But now after sitting for so long, I know what I have to do. I'm going to be a felon in America, and that's fine. I understand from the U.S. government's perspective that if I don't plead guilty and they didn't indict me, I wouldn't be a felon. I could become a police officer and work for the government. I could carry a firearm on the street. So let me backtrack because I don't know if that was confusing to you.
She's basically saying, I understand that the U.S. wants to make me a felon.
Yeah.
They want me to be restricted in what I am allowed to do because I have committed a crime this egregious.
I guess
she's saying, I understand.
She's saying, I understand. She did fight for a long time. She tried to be like, I did my time. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. And the U.S. is like, no. We have to charge you here.
You can have a clean slate in this country, babe.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially because you killed your mother, who's an American citizen.
Right.
In 2023, June, she pleads guilty to one count of conspiring to kill a U.S. national. And in the plea deal, she faced a maximum of 28 years. Her attorneys are like, can we do 15-year sentence, but the 9 years credit for the 7 years served in Indonesian jail and also for the 2 years while she's in custody in U.S. So she's asking her lawyers, like, let's do 15 years. We're going to subtract the 7 years she was in jail in Indonesia. And also she's been in jail in the U.S. for 2 years since she was initially arrested waiting for trial. Mm-hmm. So let's give credit for that. And her lawyer, which I think actually made sense for the taxpayers to incur the hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars to incarcerate her for an extended period of time is unnecessary. So, like, think about that. By us putting her in jail for that long, we are paying for her as a prisoner. However, at this that's true of any prisoner. At her sentencing, apologizes to her mom's siblings, and she talks about how having a child changed her way of thinking and how she understands her mother more. Sheila's brother says it's the first time he ever heard her apologize. Mm. And he's like, she's not sorry. She showed no remorse. Mm-hmm. It's found out at that point that the guardian of her daughter told her what happened to her mother and why she was in jail, and her daughter wants nothing to do with her. And in court, they said that her daughter is amazing and empathetic in spite of, not because of, Heather. Mm-hmm. January 17th, 2024, a couple weeks ago, she was sentenced to 26 years in U.S. prison with only 2 years credit for being in custody. Yeah. In the U.S. government. She is known as the suitcase killer.
Wow.
And I just want to finish this off about Sheila. Sheila's brother said that she was wicked smart, very thoughtful, and had a beautiful smile. She loved listening to classical music and going to the opera. She had more books than anyone I know. Please remember her as this person, not the woman stuffed into a suitcase.
Ugh, and that is such an indignity. Like, I just can't
totally
do that. Ugh. It's your mom.
It's so sad too. I mean, I think she deserves to be punished. What feels crazy to me is that mm-hmm. there are people, and it, you know, obviously our criminal justice system is deeply flawed, mm-hmm. but it feels like her getting 26 years is more than other people for, you know, like, it's like
you can never. Yeah, it's very hard.
It's really hard.
Because we read so many sentences on this podcast, so yeah. I do think that you can't help but in your brain be like, this guy got 3 years.
It's for like we covered a
brutal
case.
Rape.
This what one, was you know, the case you, of like guy the guy who killed the guy who killed his best friend, mm-hmm. and he served no additional time.
Yeah, because he cooperated and
flipped on his right. accomplice.
Who knows? I mean, it's.
I think the fact is like we are paying for her to be in jail, which I think is an interesting sort of way of looking at it. I mm-hmm. obviously, it did not work. I also think that the media attention from this mm-hmm. did not help her. Like, I think that mm-hmm. people were out for blood and looking for justice. But it seems, frankly, like she, the fact that was the first time she apologized was when she got in trouble. Mm-hmm. Her statement of being like, I know I need to be a felon in the U.S. I know they need to charge me. I know I need to, like, have responsibility feels like it was something that her lawyer told her to say, which yep. makes sense.
I get that.
And I think Tommy is still in Indonesia serving his time.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's greed. The story of the suitcase. Greed, man. Greed and, like, it seems like a damaged child. Like, it seemed like, I don't know what happened to her, but, like, that's just the amount of...
All those cruises.
Too many cruises.
That can do that to you.
I didn't know.
Yeah,
that's helpful buffet. To know. Okay.
I'm going to tell you a pretty wild story that I got from Britannica, Wikipedia, BBC, Guardian, and History Channel. And it takes place in Alsace, Strasbourg, Alsace, which is France.
Strasbourg?
It's France, but at the time that it happened, it wasn't France. It was the Holy Roman Empire.
Wait a minute. This is super long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quinn, I think what year is this?
1500s.
This might be the oldest case we've done on the pod.
Is it?
Except for like when you've done like time blips, time slips. Yeah.
Like, even then, I don't think anyone went back to the 1500s.
Do we have any information about this? Or maybe Bog Body. Maybe Bog
Body
was
There was stuff written about it. So what happens is we're in Strasbourg and a woman named Frau Trophia starts to boogie. She's dancing in the streets.
Wait, that's dangerous back then, isn't it? Is it the devil's thing?
Well, no, no. You're allowed to dance. She is dancing in a way that's a little weird, like high energy. And like, it's not, it doesn't have like Belle walking through the town vibes that's like peaceful. And she's like, good day, bonjour, you know, like, where is the baker? Whatever it is. It's not that. It's like manic, if that makes sense.
Yes, that does. And I also think any woman dancing probably would be seen as manic back then. But
well, you would think. But what actually ends up happening is she's doesn't stop dancing. She's dancing and they're like, she's really dancing. And she doesn't stop. And so suddenly somebody else is like, I'm dancing too. I'm going to dance too. And they're dancing. And she's been dancing for a week. She's been dancing for a week. She doesn't stop dancing.
I want to hear.
I'm not clear on if there are coffee breaks or like
sleep breaks,
quick sit downs.
What I would love right now is if we had access, if you just imagine, okay, if we were still at Crime of a Lifetime and we had a budget for a Foley artist. Imagine a little harpsichord,
the little
of Footloose.
Yeah,
like Footloose. Like of like just like an old timey Footloose playing right now.
Oh, I love
underscoring.
That.
Okay,
she is dancing, and people are joining her, and you've got a bunch of people joining in. It's turning into the most epic dance party. What will actually be the most epic dance party of the century? Maybe of all time, actually, in the world. So by August, a couple months later, 400 people have joined the dance party. And they're dancing in the streets. They are not stopping. And people are like, what do we think about this? And doctors are like, hot blood. It's a hot blood thing. It's definitely when you have a fever, your body wants to dance it away when you're sick. But, you know, let's lean in. Dancing's healthy, so it seems like it should be fine. So let's build a stage. We're going to build a stage. You know what might stop them? Let's get professional dancers.
Let's intimidate them.
On the stage. Yeah, make them self-conscious and make them be like, now that's really how you move. So they bring in some pro dancers, put them on the stage. The town hires a band. I mean, this sounds great. This sounds like fun and hard to have missed. So they do some music, they're dancing, but they're like, yeah, to our point that we thought it could be illness, people are collapsing from having danced for this amount of time. People are dropping dead, it would seem, from heart attacks or strokes maybe. And they're like, God, maybe this backup band we hired is too good. No, they didn't say that. But I think everybody's... You know, it's the 1500s. We got to speculate quite a bit here. I should say this is not the only known incident of something like this happening. Similar dance manias took place in places like all over Europe, Germany and Holland. But none of them, this one goes down in history as the largest and the most people died. So this is 1518, and there's a lot of historical papers that lend credence to this that are things like physicians' notes, sermons that people gave at the time, like that are referencing it, and then old-timey local papers, notices.
Whoa.
So there's like a lot of historical documents that we know this dance party, this deadly, deadly dance party definitely happened. There were notes that the city council, that the Strasbourg city council had written up on it.
Oh my God.
Lasted for so fucking long. Like this thing did not stop. And so the police are like, what are we meant to do? And the city council is like, okay, well, we just want to know, what do the doctors think? And they're like, we don't know. Maybe they're just sick and they need to dance it away. And they're like, you guys, this is like, you keep saying that. That's not really been useful. And so they take the guild halls and move all the furniture. They make it so that we can bring more people inside to dance in there. Basically, they're growing the dance party, this town. They're like, we have to make more room to accommodate the dance party. We also have to get people that are not dancing to hold up the very sick people that are dancing. They even try. So then they try to do Footloose. They're like, should we make it like illegal? Is that going to make anybody not do it? They're like, it's banned, you guys. It's banned. And music is also banned.
Which is weird. It's a horrible word because bands play music and that's hard.
So that doesn't work either. And I'm not sure if they thought about it this way then, but there is a psychological element where they're like, we don't know if there is something physically inside them that makes them want to dance or
and medical
psychological
stuff, yeah.
Because there was a lot of rumors that this could have been a punishment from St. Vitus or Vitus, V-I-T-U-S. That's a Catholic saint who a lot of Europeans at the time were like, oh, that saint has the power to curse you with a dancing plague. And so even if you weren't afflicted by his curse, you might start dancing to be like, I'm going to dance out my sins too. Like, let's all get rid of these sins. And I think that what we need to do is think about what was happening during that time, which is that there's famine and there's the plague and like fucking disease. And it's bad news, bears everywhere. So it was very stressful. Like, people were anxious because a lot of people they knew were dying. And so then there's this idea that everyone's so stressed, they're getting hysterical and they don't know what to do. And so somebody starts this idea and then it becomes like a mass hysteria because they're like, yeah, if you're doing it, I'll do it. Like, can we dance the plague away almost? Paracelsus or Paracelsus is a chemist and he wrote about this at the time. He's talking about who's doing it. And he wrote, whores and scoundrels who take pleasure in guitar and lute playing, satisfying all voluptuousness, bodily pleasure, imagination, and fancy. So he's basically being like, the people doing this are in sin. It's sinful people that are attending this dance party.
Right.
So
the medicine back then is so defunct and so crazy. I don't know if it's that this time, but it's like, black bile, yellow bile. Like, it's like all the weird shit.
Well, and he says, he's like, oh, there's like these things in your body. They're called laughing veins. And it like, it can be really like ticklish where like it goes through your veins and goes into your head and makes you confused and like clouds your vision so that you start just doing like wacky motions. And it's all about like a blood disease. Like, it's basically hot blood. It's basically what the physicians are saying at the time, which is like, oh, it's because of hot blood.
Oh,
but
my God.
He's also like, whatever's going on, it's not the devil. It's their imagination in the devil. Mm-hmm. So it's not a curse that was put on them from a saint. It's like, it's hysteria, basically, is what he's saying. And no one knows what to do because no one knows why it's happening is basically what you need to understand from all this. Nobody knows how to fix it. And luckily, by September, it starts to subside. And then they take the people that are still dancing and they send them to a shrine in the mountains to pray. And it's the shrine there is the shrine of St. Vitus. And they put red shoes on them, which I don't know the symbolism of. But they're like, you all need to go to a mountain and keep dancing in these red shoes. We're going to put some holy water on you. We're going to like put paint crosses all over you. We're going to like give you crosses to hold. And we'll all just try to cast out whatever's happening by prayer and blessing and doing whatever with crosses and reciting Latin. I don't know.
So like it started where they were like, let's lean into it. And now they're like, we have to take things away. That's
they're like,
so
we got to get these people out of here. And then it slowly stops. And then everybody's like, did you hear? They're like, praying worked. And it's over. And we're okay now. And they called it the dancing plague. And there's a huge controversy about, did people actually dance themselves to death? Because that's what you hear about when you read about this is like people dance themselves to death. And it's like, or was it the plague? Like, there was a lot of people dying for a lot of reasons. And it doesn't mean they weren't also dancing when this happened. And the dancing is strange. So you asked how many people died. Nobody knows the answer to that. So the plague was killing like 15 people a day. Mm-hmm. we don't have any records of how many people died dancing, but whenever you read about it, you read of accounts of people dying. There aren't clear records on it. There aren't clear numbers.
Do you think when I go dancing on Saturday nights, I should be worried about this affliction?
Definitely. It's catching. I mean, that's the one thing we do know, and that's why it's weird, is that it was seemingly contagious because this one woman starts a dance party and then everyone...
I would say actually that, but if you've been to a wedding, you know that it's true.
Well, here's the other thing. All the accounts that people died are only from later accounts of that happening. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Nothing that was happening during that time had people saying, none of the papers, none of the notes that were being written said, like, this person died. It feels like that could totally be a rumor in the sense that after the fact, we're seeing people say, and people died, mm-hmm. not during the fact.
Yeah.
There was a guy that wrote about it named John Waller, and he wrote a book called A Time to Dance, A Time to Die, The Extraordinary Story of the Dancing Plague of 1518. I didn't read it, but it sounds great. So people looking back on this, it's like this fun mystery to try to solve where they're like, what happened there? And people are like, it could have been poison because there was – like magic mushrooms around at that time that like they could have all been eating magic mushrooms essentially because the kind of fungus that has this psychoactive chemical grows on grains like rye. Is it that? I think it's called ergotamine.
Okay.
They would have been baking bread with this rye that had like a mushroom grow on it. And then they would have baked bread and people would have had the bread and it makes it happen.
Whoa.
And it's basically LSD.
Yeah.
I shouldn't even liken
it
to mushrooms. It's
hallucinogenic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so in fact, in history, they have blamed the Salem witch trials on that. They have said, what if
people
were
baking
LSD into bread and then everyone was eating the bread and then everyone was like, I'm on LSD, let's kill some witches.
Wait a minute. That's so fun because it just reminds me a little bit of like Last of Us mm-hmm. with like we have like zombie parasites things or fungus. Like
or
what
like
if
we could all just go nuts?
Or we could all just go like party hard.
And anyone that was gluten-free was like, why are
what
you guys
the fuck
dancing
is going
so
on?
Much?
Why are you seeing?
I also like it because in this way of looking at morality and people – it's like, no. Nothing bad ever happened in history. And anything bad that did was just actually a bad trip.
Point two for humanity.
Here's the only problem with the theory.
Okay.
If you were poisoned by that kind of drug,
everybody would die.
You wouldn't have been able to dance your brains out for days and days. That's not something that like physically would have happened.
Right.
Not only that, but like any drug, we can't say, here's all these people that took this drug and then they all behaved exactly the same way.
Right.
That's not how that would have gone. We would have seen cuckoo stuff, but it had been all kinds of cuckoo stuff. Also, that theory doesn't work because let me figure this out.
Weird.
Oh, okay. Also, anytime we saw something like this happen, one of these plagues, they were somewhere along the Rhine or Moselle rivers. Those are areas – so all the areas were linked by bodies of water, but they had totally different crops. But we're trying to call it a problem with a crop. So it doesn't work. And it feels like it's much more likely if there was something happening that it would be something in the water, not something in a crop.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. I did just anecdotally, when I was reading about this, read that in Italy in the 15th century, there is this woman and she got bit by a spider, and that the poison in it made her dance convulsively. So a lot of people were like, yes, of course, because the only way to get the poison out is to like,
sweat it out.
Is to boogie it out. Like woogie boogie. And I'm just like, I love like all these doctors being like, just dance the problem away.
I feel like that's actually what I've been living on. I think my whole life has been like, just dance the problem away.
Yeah.
That's really my MO.
Dance it out, baby. So obviously at the end of the day, we don't know why, but mass hysteria seems to be a favorite.
Yeah.
And people call it psychogenic movement disorder, where a bunch of people do something really wackadoo, but it's all the same across the board and it's all feeding in and influencing each other because it's mass hysteria, which
yeah.
It just like sort of in a vague way reminded me of the twins I told you about where they like yeah. don't know yeah, why yeah, they yeah. had like the yeah. shared psychosis. But that was like a shared psychosis between two, a foie deux or whatever I called yeah. it. And this is like a foie billion where it's like there's so many people that were doing this and it was like it was contagious. But when they talk about mass hysteria, they talk about it being more likely to happen around – populations where there's really elevated stress. And like I told you, if everyone's dying of the plague all around you and you don't know if you're going to die or your kid's going to die and you're starving and all these things are happening, plus it's a really religious time and there's a ton of superstition linked to the religion.
Yeah.
And interwoven with the religion.
Interesting.
I don't know. But to summarize, there have been 7 cases of dancing plague.
Whoa.
In like Europe. During the medieval era. This is the biggest one. This is the one that everybody talks about. And they dubbed it choreomania, which is such a fun.
I love that.
I like to picture there was any choreo in this mania. Like anyone's doing like a quick Bob Fosse all together. That would be so
fabulous. It's
just
a musical. It feels like I have so many things. One, it's a musical. Two, it's Dance Yourself Clean by mm-hmm. LCD Sound System. Like it's all the like, yes. yeah, there's so many.
Yeah. Well, I think that's been, what do you call it?
An influence?
Yeah. An artist later because you read about this and it is.
It's wild.
It's so visceral and strange.
It's
and
also a plot point
like,
in.
What?
It's also a plot point in Hocus Pocus.
Oh, yes. I had forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. it's just so wild it ever happened. And
wow.
In doing the play that I'm doing right now that has this cult, the cult is part of their task has been to like write and rewrite history over time. And when we were doing a meet and greet with the you know, everyone that's going to work together, the director as an icebreaker was saying, can everybody just name a thing in history that they're really like drawn to or interested in? And one of the producers was like, the dancing plague. And I was like, say what?
You're like, I need to know more, please.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. That's so interesting. Wow. All right. We should go because we have another episode to record.
Let's go dance.
Let's go dance. Mom, I just want to dance. Hey, like, subscribe, review, live, laugh, love, eat, pray, don't die.
And be careful if you dance.